Welcome to the Safe and Sound Protocol podcast, a polyvagal theory-informed therapy. I'm your host, Joanne McIntyre. Here we talk everything polyvagal and SSP related. Dr. Porges has provided us with a revolutionary framework for understanding the connection between our autonomic nervous system and behavior. The SSP acoustic intervention is an exciting new therapy helping people all around the world.
Hello and welcome to episode 28. What I really enjoy about hosting this podcast is the opportunity to meet authentic people passionate about their work and who are open to sharing their knowledge with you. In this episode, I speak with six, yes, six, skilled somatic experience practitioners. To be honest, I was a little concerned about how it would flow with six people, but I feel it resulted in a wonderful conversation. Please listen in as I speak with Paula Scatoloni, Laura Moorhead, Kate Appleton, Melinda Cornish, Katie McLean, and Leah DeWong about somatic experience and supporting clients within an integrated model of somatic experience and the Safe and Sound Protocol. This team of practitioners can be thanked for their work in developing a set of guidelines for Unite, which informs somatic experience practitioners about how to integrate the Safe and Sound Protocol to facilitate deep somatic healing work. You will hear as they each discuss their unique approach and their commitment to an integrated somatic experience and Safe and Sound Protocol model to help in the healing process. Let's just launch in, and I'm going to sort of welcome you all to my podcast, and I'm so excited about our conversation today. We have a rich group of minds here. We have lots of knowledge to share for our listeners. So we're going to be talking about somatic experiencing and the Safe and Sound Protocol, and we're going to be learning about each, in particular focusing on somatic experiencing, but then how do we actually work with blending these very rich interventions together. So today we have a panel of smart practitioners who have a wealth of knowledge that's going to share that with you. So I thought what we'll just do is I'm going to ask you all just to give a little brief introduction about where you are and your area of expertise. So I'm going to go by my panel view here. So Kate Appleton, if you could maybe just start.
Sure. So I'm Kate Appleton, and I come to this from a psychotherapy background, and I utilize a lot of sensory modalities, and SSP and focus are a part of that. I'm in the midst of creating a new model that gears itself towards coaches and counseling, and I'm looking at the intersection between the two and how we really approach things from a formative, expanded view. And in doing that, I think it's really important that we look at sensory tools and not just the tool nature of SSP or of focus, but how that then lives in our practice and how that expands our practice and gives us more possibilities for an expanded view. So thanks for including me.
I love that. And where are you located, Kate?
I'm in Virginia, near Charlottesville, Virginia.
Lovely, lovely. And Melinda?
My name is Melinda Cornish, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I practice psychotherapy for many years in the United States in Apex, North Carolina. And my practice incorporated both somatic experiencing and SSP in bringing both frequencies, if you will, the resonant feel of the client, but also the beautiful modality of SSP to a person's experience and healing. And as my evolution has changed, I've transitioned out of therapy and now moving more into healing work, which has brought a greater expansion into really working with people's resonance field. So I'm no longer into the form of fixing, if you will. I'm more into helping people find their own light and inner healing, which has been a really beautiful journey.
I love that. Thank you. And where are you located?
I'm actually in the United States in Apex, North Carolina.
North Carolina. Beautiful. Beautiful. And Paula?
Yes, I'm Paula Scatoloni. I'm in Durham, North Carolina as well. And I come as I was a somatic psychotherapist, and so have trained in many, many different models within the SE community and then outside of the SE community. So I bring about that knowledge base, and from that was able to understand SSP and its inner workings. I also have studied sound therapy, and so I can also speak to how SSP works from a sound therapist perspective. And presently I offer groups for SSP, primarily to SSP providers, providers who want to use SSP or are already using SSP, or those that are exploring it for more expansion of consciousness, similar to psychedelics and other breath work and those type of things.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Excellent. And then Katie?
Hi, I'm Katie McLean. I am in the Los Angeles area of California, and I am a coach, longtime coach, and somatic experiencing practitioner. I use a couple of other modalities, touch and parts work, in my work as well. And I'm not expanding the way these other three are, which is so lovely, but I can feel something changing, which is nice. But yes, I love incorporating both SSP with SE.
Yes, well, welcome. Thank you for coming today. And Laura?
Yeah, I'm Laura Moorhead, and I'm in Hawaii. And I came to this from a background in body work, specifically craniosacral therapy. And years ago, started to feel with my clients that they really needed more support in releasing trauma and emotions from their bodies. And we live so much in our heads in this culture, and the body gets lost, the emotions get stuck in our bodies. And so I started incorporating different modalities to support releasing some of that from the body, and became a somatic experiencing practitioner, added SSP in 2019, and work with all ages, but specifically focus on children. And I created a program for kids with learning challenges and those on the spectrum. And I used the craniosacral therapy, but the SSP and the focus program, elements of somatic experiencing, and then also a movement-based program called HANDLE, which is the holistic approach to neurodevelopment and learning efficiency. And I work on Zoom and I work in person, and I'm happy to be here today.
Excellent. Well, we're very happy to have you. So far, we've got a wealth of different perspectives and knowledge bases. Yes, I'm very excited to hear what unfolds today. And then Leah DeWang.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Leah. And I actually work for Unite. It was part of creating the concept for these guidelines. I approach my own practice with the belief that all humans, all of existence, and all humans are designed to receive unconditional, unlimited love. And our experiences and the things that we carry, whether it's in the brain, in the mind, in the body, get in the way of that. And so I work with my clients to clear the way, to move all of that, to dissolve it, to allow it to integrate back into where it belongs so that someone can receive unconditional love. I'm studying somatic experiencing, so I'm on my last year, which is really great. And it was just such an honor to sit at the feet of all these lovely, lovely humans as they as we created the guidelines together. So glad to be here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We're glad you're here to join us today here too as well. So let's just start with a big one. For our listeners who have never heard about somatic experiencing, can you give an overview, you know, what is the main premise, you know, some background information, who developed it. So who would like to jump in and start with that one?
Well, I can start. I can.
Okay.
You can. So I'll just start and then you pick up, Paula. Mm-hmm. So perfect. Peter Levine began this, and really he wasn't the only one that started to look at how somatics and the use of paying attention to our body, but he was the one that brought together the tool of a model that would help us work with shock trauma. And in doing that, he opened us up to understand a number of different things. And probably people are familiar with the window of tolerance, how we look at our nervous system and expand our ability to tolerate uncomfortable feelings. And to do that, we look at titrating an experience. We look at what happens as we become aware of our physiology, how we orient to time and space and being in the room. He really brought us a gift of being able to understand a relationship with our body and with our sensory systems. And I'll let Paula add more.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah, Peter's background was in body work originally. I believe it was Rolfing. And so he also comes from similar to what might have been Melinda mentioned, of this idea of organicity and trusting the body, and that the body's always going to move towards health, and that how we best serve clients is to first believe that that can happen and to see them as healed and whole, and also to get out of the way. And so learning how to hold space and also how to regulate our own nervous systems, that's the primary tool in the room is the provider's own regulation. And so many bottom-up modalities that work with trauma use that type of model, the idea that consciousness is stored in the body, organicity, trusting that we will get led in the right direction. And so I think SE is one of many right now, but it's really becoming more and more popular across the globe. And I think we're fairly close to having enough research to be evidence-based at this time as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a very exciting time.
Excellent. So just for our listeners, I just want them to know, so when anyone mentions SE as an abbreviation, it's just an abbreviation for somatic experiencing. So, and then, hey, I was wondering if you could just unfold a little bit more of, you know, like shock trauma, because I mean, some people might be listening and thinking, well, I don't think I have shock trauma, so maybe this isn't something that would actually work for me.
I think the important thing is that each one of us is unique. We all have a lot of things in common, but the way my nervous system responds to something can be completely different than the way Laura's nervous system responds to some event that might seem minor, like little kids fall off their bikes or adults bonk their heads or whatever it might be. And for some people, that can be very dysregulating for their nervous system. And it also depends on the impact. There's so many things to consider, but you know, one of the ways we describe it is anything that is too much or too fast for my particular nervous system can be a shock and can be something that leaves us with a residue that we call trauma or intense stress or what it's verbalized in a lot of different ways, articulated in different ways. But that's one of the key aspects, I believe, in this work. And it's important to understand that.
And I think one of the other aspects, one of the gifts of SE is this idea of the completion of a physical process that didn't get to be completed in the event of a shock trauma. So for example, if there was an attack and you weren't able to run, but everything in you wanted to run at that moment, that desire to run is held in the body until it can be released. And so that's part of what SE would then do, is to come in and help the person, first of all, feel that desire to run, to reconnect with that, and then to be able to actually play that out so that that bound tension can be released from the system.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean it sort of includes a bit of, with this somatic awareness, there's some sort of dynamic sort of role playing within the sessions?
Yes, very much so. And that can look very different according to the practitioner or the client that's there. But yes.
Mm-hmm. I love that, in what you said, Laura, about helping the body release that, because I recently did a podcast that it's being edited with Richard, who a local practitioner here in Australia who oversees TRE. So tension and trauma releasing exercises. And so we unraveled that, and he really spoke about how, you know, traumas or stresses or incidents that happen really do get held in the body. And, you know, we need to, you know, release that. So these are a set of exercises to help do that. So this works, it sounds like it helps. It's in that sort of philosophy as well, of that understanding that we need to release that kind of energy that's held there.
Yeah, and that's one of the ways I think that Peter Levine came upon this work, is observing in nature how when animals are traumatized, they go through it and they don't carry it with them. They then go about their life, and he was observing what happens. And very often what happens if an animal's been attacked and is able to get away, they go through a shaking procedure where every part of their body shakes, and then when that's complete, they're just good to go. They continue on. So yeah,
I think the nature of combining different methods like SSP gives us a subtle ability to release without heavy shaking, because it's using vibration and frequency in a different way. And sometimes the idea of, oh my gosh, I have to replay some sort of trauma, and I don't know that I want to replay it and shake and do all those things. Well, we don't have to. There are many different ways to release. So one way is using a sound program like SSP. It does help us to move through something without the shaking.
The way that, I don't know if we're on to this next question, it feels like we're naturally going there though. When we think about the complementariness of the two, is that in SE, we're trained to help a client walk through and metabolize a specific trauma. Meaning that their nervous system might be stuck in either hyper or hypo arousal states, right? Rather than a nice fluidity between the two. When we bring in the SSP, rather than going after a particular event, the SSP would simply just expand the relational field so that events just start to metabolize on their own. So it's a different way of working with the material that is less directive, right, and more passive, and allows the organicity of the body to decide what is going to come up to be processed.
Which in a subtle way allows for not having a demand placed on the body or the system. It allows the person to just show up authentically as themselves, and the process then will, like Paula mentioned, metabolize and process through without the client being in a position to have to effort. They're arriving with a history of efforting and surviving, and it's in turn trying to offer that to be offloaded from them, so that they can encounter a way of moving through and have an end point of healing rather than having to dredge up things over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what I'm a little curious about is a little bit of the process. And we can definitely, let's talk about the process in of blending both together. I'm familiar with EMDR, where EMDR is a very phased approach. And obviously we have structure even to SSP. So if, you know, how would it look, you know, for a client coming and, you know, and starting that journey of working with both these modalities together?
Well, as Katie mentioned, we have five different SEPs here. And so you may have five different answers to mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. So maybe we each might talk about that.
Fantastic.
So she can get a little flavor of how we might use it differently.
Mm-hmm. And I would love, sorry to interrupt there, Paula, yeah. but I would love it if we could have a little bit, because that involves obviously client sort of case examples, but if we could go across the lifespan a little bit. So Laura, I know you mentioned you work with children and if somebody else does as well, but if we could maybe tailor it a little bit to how this may look or across the lifespan, it would be wonderful. So Paula, sorry, please go on.
Oh, so I can start. So for me, in my version of using it, I'm using the SSP rather than leading with SE as the trauma processing. I'm leading with the SSP. So I'm using SSP for trauma processing and then integrating SE into that. And so what that means is in SE, we work with this idea of resourcing and bringing in resources to enhance the safety, right? Or to create more of a expansion in a system that might be contracted. And I see SSP as a resource. And so it comes in to support the expansion through the relational field, which is the attachment and bonding system. And when there is more safety that's added, then more material comes up to be. It's almost like the body knows, like, there's enough safety here for me to show you this now. And so I do this in a group format, taking in people. Primarily, my focus is on early 0 to 3 experiences, the early experiences, I would say 0 to 7, of the shaping of the self. And so what tends to happen for me is people are traversing their earliest experiences of belonging, of safety, of relational connection. And so it's not so much shock trauma that I'm processing. It's more attachment and bonding and relational dynamics that are getting brought to the surface for the person to engage with. And I do that from a parts perspective. And so, but I'm letting the SSP facilitate a lot of the process rather than directing it with SE. Mm-hmm. So I've flipped those two. And then someone else might have a different approach.
So I'm just going to add another question to that. So SSP is a resource, but I'm sure you use some other resources as well within that sort of somatic experience umbrella to help sort of hold the SSP experience. So what kind of things might that look like?
I use a lot of things that occupational therapists would use because I'm working with early developmental movements of the infant. So I use movement exercises and tools that engage the push, the reach, the grasp, the pull, and with the whole process being to support the yield. And so, so I'm really looking at the somatic scaffolding of the attachment system. Mm-hmm. Through those movements. And so, but they're basically things an occupational therapist would use that you'd find in an occupational therapist's office. Mm-hmm. So physio balls, weighted blankets, warmth, PT bands, et cetera.
The sensory fiddly tools and lovely, beautiful. Who would love to share next?
Well, I do an interesting blend because I work with adults and families. And so if a family comes and brings somebody 8 years old or somebody 16 years old, or somebody 24 and say they're, you know, that's the identified client, then immediately I'm going to gather the family. And as I do, I want to increase the felt sense of safety. So I'm applying my SE tools, the toolbox tools, without naming them usually. So I'm going to increase orientation to the space and how safety feels in a sensory way. And then very quickly, within the first couple of sessions, I will add SSP as a resource and as an experience, right? Mm-hmm. So I may have the child start, or I may have a parent start. If I work with a couple that comes in for marriage counseling, say they're even if they're having trouble with sex, I will still suggest that mm-hmm. one of them at least start with SSP. And as a result of that, that increases regulation in that particular part of the coupleship. And then usually we flip it and the other partner will begin. Sometimes we'll extend that into the use of focus, which is another sound program. And what I see is a building of connection and not only a connection to each other, but also a connection to the felt sense of safety. And a lot of times we see big shifts happening that are not consciously named until I'll notice it and name it. So let's say somebody has an issue with OCD tendencies. After the SSP, that begins to soften. And I'm also using the tools of polyvagal theory, of SE, but I'm just not always naming it, because to me, the relationship is the most important piece. And then I just slip in those tools, whether it's a child, a teenager, an adult, a couple, or a whole family coming together and applying some of these tools. Hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And I think I'm going to circle back to what you said at the beginning, that you sort of work in, you know, with those resonant frequencies. And we know from, and I'm so glad you brought up polyvagal theory, because obviously that sort of it weaves all its way into both these modalities. But our resonant frequencies of our subconscious nervous system speaking to those other nervous systems in our environment. So what you're sort of saying, or what I'm interpreting, is if you can go in and create a shift in one of those resonant frequencies, well, then that radiates out to those others around and creates the possibility of shifts there. And we that journey of more adaptive, you know, or homeostasis. So lovely. Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to add there?
Well, just that, you know, we sometimes as practitioners, we think we have to name all the different methods we're using. But the truth is, most of us are experienced and we use a lot of different methods. And it's not always essential that we differentiate, okay, this I'm doing as SE, this is EMDR, this is SSP, and this is cognitive behavioral therapy, and this is art therapy. That's all very, well, they're not then working together. So for me, I want to integrate that without having to necessarily say, okay, we're going to stop now and we're going to do this. If we can blend it because it's part of who I am, then me as the practitioner arrives and hopefully I'm aligned and I create the resonant field and I connect to safety and I invite that, then it's contagious. And then we have an experience and then I bring their awareness to where are they experiencing that experience, okay? So where in you right now is that smile? What is happening in your smile and how are your shoulders carrying that? And what's resonating in that chest of yours? And what are your eyes seeing? And how are you taking me in? And I'll do that during a listening session of sound. I'll do that in the moment of what happens when a spouse is sitting listening to another spouse share something. So again, I'm still pulling from my work as an SEP and my use of sound and so many other things to bring awareness to our sensory world and how we communicate that.
I love that. I think that's coming from a wise clinician that's had many years of experience. And you're exactly right. We are complex beings, and that we need to have a multimodal approach and be in the flow to know what to integrate at the time. And I think sometimes we get very caught up in evidence-based, and I know it's our society, it's our world. So, yeah, thank you for sharing that. That was lovely. Melinda, I'd love to hear what you have to
share. Yeah, I really am stepping into more heart embodiment. Mm-hmm. The way in which we as a culture and society experience love are varied. And it comes from, okay, what does love feel like to me in relationship to a parent, right? But when we're talking about shock trauma or SE, there could have been a relational overcoupling where there might be trauma affiliated with love and how that gets integrated in the nervous system. So in essence, by bringing SE and SSP together, it's a dismantling of the overcoupling. Or pulling together pieces that were not integrated as not even having a sense of safety or a sense of love. So it's bringing in that resonant feel to help heal that part through awareness and art and other modalities that I also bring in relationship to the healing of the self. Because ultimately we want to come up and back to self-love. We kind of evade that altogether, but that is such a crucial part, because then I can truly show up as me without having to override or be something else for someone else. Instead, I can show up as me authentically and be okay with whatever shows up and happens.
I like that. So what would a session look like? I know that can be so vary. So give us a little visual picture.
Yeah. So the most important piece is safety. That's what we all want to achieve. And yet so many people don't even have a conceptualization in nervous system about what that safety feels like. So it's having to sometimes for folks give them the opportunity to come up with it. But if you're hedging that there's something made up or just not authentic, sometimes I will create it. So let's imagine building a treehouse in a tree. How do you feel about trees? How do you feel about heights? What would it be like to be in a treehouse? So going back to the child states of creating, it might be a hula hoop that you stand in the middle of. Can you sense the ring around you just from that hula hoop? Is that space too small or is it too big? And just following the client to create safety first. And then as SSP gets incorporated, it allows for what Paula talked about, which is allowing for a little more expansion to happen, where there's not a need for cognitive process to have to hold or create. That's the efforting I spoke about. I don't want to have to effort and create that safety because it's not something that holds for very long. So you want to give the client the opportunity to just feel into what it's like to have SSP come in and feel the music and allow the music to integrate in a way that just sets that up naturally within them. Just notice the difference. And it's all about what is your intention? Well, we want to intend to create safety. Great. Let's intend to create that and see how it unfolds. And how it unfolds, oftentimes what I see is in a person's art. And so I take them through the 5 days creating art. And in that, there's an evolution that comes through from their higher consciousness that shows up in a way that evokes a new way of perspective, both within and also externally. Mm-hmm. So it's a lovely process.
So you have a client listening to the Safe and Sound Protocol
in session and then sort of have listening sessions and then pausing and doing some of this sort of expansion safety work and then maybe doing some artwork and then come back and sit and do another segment of listening.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And then also we will tap into the pre, like the assessment is asking questions about love in a lot of different ways. So in a way, that's an assessment that I do because that's a focus about what love looks like, what it feels like, what it means. So it's like going through CIBEM, which is sensory and image and memory. So I'm asking certain questions, but it's directed in love. And then expanding from that.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Heidi?
I have my sort of general protocol is really assessing the client before we begin. I work with a lot of complex clients, so I might start with some SE sessions or some parts work sessions or usually a combination of those before we start SSP, because actually quite a few of my clients, long-term clients they're just, even the idea of listening is a little bit daunting for them. So for some clients using touch or parts work or SE combination, I'm helping them get to a place of expansion, of feeling more comfort, of having more capacity in their nervous system before we even begin. Although I do have people who come to me specifically for SSP, and again, I'm still assessing them, but we'll start right in the beginning with if they have the capacity, if I feel that they're in a place where they can start, we'll do some resourcing. We'll talk about what the process is going to be like together. We'll decide what are we going to do? Do you want to do art? Do we want to do some movement? You know, we're going to incorporate whatever each client needs. And then titrating the delivery. So, you know, we use that word titration in SE a lot, which just means tiny baby steps to begin. And so I'm, you know, just delivering little bits of the music, seeing how they're doing, noticing what's happening. Most clients can continue no problem, even after we begin with the titration. And then what I find, and you know, it's been mentioned here, is that as they feel the sense of safety from the music, things start to rise up in their system to be worked with. And a lot of times we will work with it while they're still listening. So I'm noticing things and say, hey, what's happening over there? I'm noticing this or that, or they might say they're noticing something. And then we work with that either by maybe putting our attention on a sensation, maybe just, you know, having the client explain what's going on and then me suggesting something, some kind of tool from SE, and they move through it, which is really nice. It's such a nice tool because of that. It will bring things up for clients to work on. But always in my case, I mean, I know everyone's doing this, but really always paying attention to not taking them over threshold. So, you know, that window of tolerance is indicating that we have a threshold over or under. So either we're going into hyper or hypo. And I'm really working to not take them outside of their window of tolerance. And if we do, then I might suggest they pause. They always, always, always have the choice to pause. That's something I notice with my clients. I'm working on their sense of agency and control, their willingness to slow down, which is something I really have to work with my clients on. And so we're incorporating that in the work we do. I tend to take my adult clients through the protocol over a 5-week period in general, but sometimes it can take longer. I've had clients who it's taken a year to get through the protocol, other ones months, you know. When I work with children, that's usually a little bit of a shorter process. So that's kind of generally, but I'm incorporating somatic experiencing. I'm incorporating parts work, and often I'm incorporating touch as well. with clients.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad you touched on touch. As I was reading through the guidelines, the somatic experiencing and safe and sound protocol guidelines that you all authored, which is available on the Unite platform, particularly directed for somatic experiencing practitioners, of how we incorporate the safe and sound protocol to complement somatic experiencing, there is a section that talks about touch work. And so I'd love it if you could just, because I know that is sometimes like a topic in therapy work. You know, often I'm an occupational therapist, so we often, that's something that we do, but I think this is a different kind of touch, and I'd love to, if you could just talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, in general, we're supporting the client's regulation, and you know, sometimes it might be settling that we're supporting. When I do touch with clients with SSP, generally, I'm just putting my hands on their kidney adrenal area. And I find that helps to kind of expand their capacity even further so that they can incorporate the SSP into their system. I know Laura uses a lot of touch as well, and she probably has a lot to add to this particular topic. Because for me, I'm not doing it with every client. I had just finished with a recent client, and she was loving having the kidney adrenal support while she listened. It was just the perfect way to do it for her. And that's, you know, I think everybody's kind of mentioned this in general, you know, I'm meeting each client where they are and with what they need. So for her, that was a really, really nice benefit. But not every client wants that, and I may not even have the impulse to offer it for every client. But and you know, we have training, we have advanced trainings beyond what we learn in advanced 2 of the SE training. There are advanced trainings in touch that I'm sure lots of us, well, I know a lot of us use that in our practices. So that's kind of the way I use it.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Bye.
Yeah, I'll add one more, and then I want to give Laura a chance because she wrote that section. Yeah. So, but for those of us, we're trained, the type of touch we're trained in is to work with developmental trauma or developmental wounds, developmental trauma. And so when I was, primarily using touch as a primary SE modality to support regulation when COVID hit. And I couldn't touch anymore. And so I started to use SSP, and I found I was getting the same results. And that's how I knew it was working on the same system, that they were both affecting the attachment and bonding systems. Mm-hmm. And so I think that some SEPs, you know, will do them separately, like listen to SSP 1 week, then do some touch, or some might combine them and have the SSP while the person is on the table receiving the touch work. And so they're very complementary, those two, that specific type of touch work. And then I'll pass over to Laura for her specialty and expertise.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. I love everything that everybody said. And touch is such a loaded subject. There's so much to it. And it's another tool. And we all have these wonderful tools that we're all very excited about. And in the end, when we have a client before us, like Kate was saying, you have to put the tools aside and just be there and show up and build connection and really feel into what's happening with this client. And then the tools just start showing up. Oh, this one is going to be helpful, and this one's going to be helpful. And it happens automatically. And so that's always, for me, my first step in being with a new client is, first of all, to really check in with my own system. Am I grounded? Am I regulated? Have I connected to all of my resources? And once that's in place, let me see what's happening with this client. What's the overall picture? What am I seeing visually? What am I hearing? What's the tone of their voice? What are they telling me? What's the story? And then from there, what do we need to do? And so And it's different with children and with adults. So with adults, people are often coming to me for SSP, and we might begin with SSP, and then out of that arises things that need to be processed and worked with. And that's where the SE or the touch skills will come in. So with the touch work, it really helps to anchor the sense of safety in the body. When you have someone who's with you, who's really regulated and grounded, and they can just put their hand on you, it's an instant transmission of that grounded, regulated presence. And sometimes that's easier to take in than someone just sitting with you talking about regulation, because then, oh, now my body feels it just right away. The other part of it is that if you have a lot of emotions coming up, but perhaps not so much the capacity to be able to be with and witness those emotions, but instead you're getting overwhelmed by them, having someone who has regulated themselves, holding space for you, having their hands on you in a safe, comforting way, gives you a model of what that witness consciousness feels like. But there, I'm feeling all this stuff, but oh, there's the hand, there's the touch that's reminding me of this safe, anchored place. You can also use it as a way to integrate what's happened. If there's been a lot of stuff coming up in a session, touch can be a way to integrate that. And it's also, if you're specifically working at the back of the skull, the base of the occiput, if you can open up that area, you free the head to orient, to be able to take in the environment again. And very often that's can get stuck in trauma. We get fixated some trauma that's happened, and we lose our capacity to take in the whole environment, which includes areas of safety. And that's also where the vagus nerve comes out, which is huge, as we all know. But the other thing about touch is gaining consent. And this is a really important area, because it's a way to renegotiate safety and to regain the capacity to ask for consent, ask for what you need, and to say no if you don't want to be touched. So it's a really great way to renegotiate either something that's a shock trauma or an attack of some kind, or developmental trauma where maybe touch wasn't appropriate back then. And now you can sort of say, yes, that feels good, or no, that doesn't feel good. I need it more gentle or not at all. Touch is a huge thing. And especially with children, it can be a very wonderful tool, because with kids, if you start spouting on a lot of words, you're going to lose them in about 3 minutes. Whereas if you start using touch or play-based therapies and games, they're much more responsive to that. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Laura, if you could just talk about what your session might look like with, let's say, like of a child coming, what would that look like with you combining your tools with the Safe and Sound protocol?
Yeah, so I loved what Kate said about when a child comes in, you really have to call together the whole family, because a child is swimming in the soup of their family. And it may not be, the child may be having issues or acting out in some way, but that may actually be coming from somewhere else in the family. So it's really important to look at all of that. So, and that's a delicate process sometimes to convey that and to start to gather that information. So once I have regulated myself, that's the first thing that I'm looking at. What is the whole family picture here? What are the stresses? What are the resources? And then from there, and also what is the issue that's showing up? Why are they here? So then from there, we might explore what's going to be a fit for them, whether it's doing SSP. And if we're doing SSP, then I really like to teach the parents how to administer the program for the child, because that's the person that they feel safe with. And I'm the coach in the background, giving them insights, giving them support, but their relationship is with their parents. And then I might encourage them to, you know, if there has been some trauma, we might do some sort of play-based, movement-based things to help the child move some of that out of their body. And that's very much just in the moment, whether I'm observing a particular gesture that the child might be making habitually, and it gives me a clue that there's something there, you know, maybe they always turn away from the right side. Well, what's happened on the right side that's caused them stress or trauma? And how can we start to encourage them very gently to be with whatever there is on the right side? But play-based, play and touch very much for children.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you. Was there anything else you wanted to share with us, Laura?
Well, that's coming up right now.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. And Leah?
Yeah. And the way that I've conceptualized bringing in SE, SSP, I also use parts work, is through what I call a restoration journey. And so I'm a coach, I'm not a therapist, and fall more in alignment with Melinda and Paul in the way that they're conceptualizing the SSP. But that this idea of a restoration journey for my clients who are generally fairly well resourced or have the capacity to be with their pain. I think of myself as a Sherpa, where I come from my own traumatic history in a lot of ways, and the SSP absolutely changed my life. So walking with clients to say, not only is healing possible, not only is being in relationship with your body and with yourself and with others and the world possible, we can actually make movement toward that. And so I'm working with clients anywhere between 5 to 7-ish months. And we're purposefully walking through the SSP using SE and IFS. I love neurobiology. And so working with the brain and not against the brain, right? Trying to work with the energies and the way that it's flowing within the brain is really important to me. And having a client start in one way and doing an intake process and understanding where they want to go, but then also watching the mystery that happens in our sessions. Sometimes the path that we all think that we might go down, or the path that we think we want to get to this particular goal, we end up somewhere else. And where we ended up, we wouldn't be able to have predicted, and is like the exact right fit for what the client's need was after those protections were softened. So it's just been really, really beautiful. And I'll share just a little fascinating thing that brings the parts work more into it in front and center, but it's supported by SE and SSP, especially if you look at it within the brain. And that this idea of resourcing and the SSP being pure resource. When I've asked clients, this is very recent, when I asked a client, can we have all your parts just step back, just to make a little space so that this music can come in? And the client did, and immediately started weeping and said, I've never felt this love before. I've never felt this before. And it filled her up. And then I started, I was like, oh my, I was moved. So that's, I lean much more into the mystery than I lean into anything else. And yeah, it's a real joy.
Well, I know you all have kind of weaved in an answer to the next question, but I'm going to maybe have you all be a little bit more explicit in your answer. But what do you really feel is the gift that the Safe and Sound Protocol brings to this kind of, you know, the working, the healing work? So maybe, Kate, do you mind starting first? What do you?
Sure. Well, I think you're right. We'll all answer it a little differently because of how it resonates in ourselves. So for me, the SSP, of course, is a tool, but it's a potent experience to be with the shifts in sound frequency that opens up like a portal of safety and regulation without language, without the need for me to explain what's happening or for the client to understand it. Instead, it provides an experience. And in that experience, I'm welcoming in spaciousness and the mystery, like Leah was talking about. That mystery is something that we can't always name with language, but we can feel into in our somatic experience of being alive. And I guess I'm struggling with language to be able to explain it to you, because there is an element of mystery. And in that, we're able to take that which is formless and bring some form. And in that, it creates a resonance in the field between myself and the client. And in that, it creates a field of openness in the client to be experiencing a relationship with herself or himself. And in that, it creates expansiveness. And that kind of experience opens up the rings, of interconnectedness, a sense of belonging, a sense of being awake in a very different kind of way. And then eventually we have to integrate that into explaining it. But in its essence, for me, it's that mystery. I hope that I hope somebody can understand that, because I'm struggling with language even to describe it, because it is a mystery. I don't think Dr. Porges had a clue what we ended up with. I think he began from a place of wanting to help us expand something. And out of that, a potent experience has arrived, and we're all using it differently.
But to add a little bit to what you're saying, I think that comes from the awareness of the practitioner and the sensitivity to be able to notice the shifts and change that it can provide. Because if there wasn't somebody there to help unfold and bring forward, then, there will be some shifts and changes that will be created from the Safe and Sound Protocol. But the true potency is that dance between nervous systems. And I think the practitioner's skill set to help enable that or be aware of those shifts and changes is I think that mystery sort of component, a little bit.
Good point. In fact, when I do a lot of supervision for clinicians, that's probably what I focus on, is how does it live in you and how do your skill sets live in you? Because if they're just in your head, then you're going to be communicating educational data, but you're not going to be giving them the mystery of the experience. And so you're absolutely right. It has a lot to do with the practitioner's presence, resonance, and connection, and the ability to be really in the field and aware. And how I track and how I bring their awareness to their experience, because somebody can be sitting in front of me and completely unaware of the changes happening in them. And when I ask them, what's going on with your jaw? Can you just tell me what you're noticing? And they'll go, I really got it closed. I'll be like, and what would it be like to just be aware of that? And not even change it yet. And then let's just wait and see what wants to happen. It's okay to keep it tight. and then see what happens. So you're right, we need that interchange.
Thank you. And I think the other part of that too is that because SSP brings this profound sense of safety, and our first thought is that's wonderful, we all want that. But for some people, it can be so threatening because it's so unfamiliar and such a new experience. And so that's where the therapist, the provider can come in and build familiarity with that experience and let them know that this is safe and this is how we're going to discover that it's safe and let's explore this. And so that piece is very important.
Well said.
I think an analogy that comes to my mind is there's a scientific experiment where you lay sand on a table and you bring music or vibration frequencies to the table where the sand lies. And if you watch and wait, the sand forms into a snowflake or a geometric design that wasn't there, because when it started, the sand was just scattered on the table. The potency of what SSP brings is it's the vibration that's encountering the vibration of the individual. And in that, there is a clearing out of particles or dust or elements of wounding or trauma that are in there, unbeknownst to the client, but that through the vibrations, that clearing happens and then opens up the most magnificent other options, other places of love and frequency that the client didn't even know or had forgotten existed, which then in turn creates safety. And that's the magic that happens with the resonant field of the practitioner and SSP and the client. And that's my experience of it. Mm-hmm.
Well, the only thing... Oh, sorry.
We need to know if that snowflake... Is that snowflake thing real?
I love it.
Evelyn, you tell me.
Please go ahead, Paula.
Yeah, I love that imagery, Melinda. We keep using the word resonance, or we keep using the field. And so I want to clarify those two words for people. Resonance is very much what Melinda just spoke about, this idea that something could be vibrating at one frequency and that frequency is organized. Laura talked about it. We think of it as the attuned and grounded parent, right? That entrains the child that's upset into that frequency of calm and grounded, right? That's what parents, when parents are regulating their children, are doing. So then my invitation, or what I think impacts the potency of SSP, is how grounded the provider is and their seat of consciousness from which they're offering the SSP from. Because the more that the provider is really embodied in their own body, right, and not up here, what it creates is a third party. And that's the resonant field of this mystery. And in that third party, that's where things can happen that are sometimes not really explainable, right? Or it might fold into something more spiritual, or might be memories that you think, wow, where did that come from, right? Because it's from the womb, for example. So it's the provider's resonance, the provider's regulation, the provider's seat of consciousness that influences how much happens in the room with, as a team member with the SSP frequency. And not to say that things don't happen, but it's the potency of it is reflective in those dynamics.
Love that. Another way I've heard that said is there's you space, there's me space, and then there's we space. And if we can, the practitioner, as everyone has said, really needs to be grounded, embodied, to their very best ability. And then if you can get into that we space, allowing the client to be exactly where they are, then yeah, magic can happen. And I'll just add, I don't know if I'm answering your question exactly, Joanne, but the thing that occurred to me as everyone was talking and with what you said was, one of the things I find with my clients that happens and why I really love and appreciate SSP so much is something can happen for the client where they go from this place of stuckness, stressed out, discomfort, you know, chronic symptoms, whatever it might be, they can go from there to this place of, oh, I'm actually okay. Oh, I'm actually okay. And then they can keep moving from there forward with whatever other support, either my support or another, a therapist support or some other practitioner support. That's what I see happen fairly quickly with the SSP, my clients. So.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I just wanted to sort of circle back to Melinda, because a couple of things came to my mind. And we all know that, and we've all shared that the potency of what the Safe and Sound can bring and all the positive shifts and changes. And I think, Melinda, you talked about how we're creating different into those different resonant frequencies, and sometimes that can purge some of, you talked about the emotions and the behaviours that we've been holding on to. But with that, and we know the vagus nerve innervates all our internal viscera, when we create some shifts in those underlying, you know, biological thermostats in terms of hormones and neurochemicals, that they can shift and get a little bit of purging that happens as well, and can create some shifts of feeling uncomfortable. And some of that purging, we've had feedback from practitioners, can look like a little bit of flu-like sort of symptoms, or some people experiencing some sore throat, or some of those sort of shifts and changes happen with that sort of purging. And I think that's when everyone's touched on the importance of titration, and this idea that we have all this change, but sometimes change brings a little bit of unsettling in the nervous system. One, that's a sign that we're creating some shifts and change. But I think having this supported safety container enables those little shifts and uncomfortable to be held more, and know that this is part of the process. So I just wondered if anyone else wanted to sort of add to what I just shared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually have my clients drink, similar to an SE session, drinking mm-hmm. extra water, taking an Epsom salt bath, spending time in nature, moving their body. So these are things that we would, if we had an SE session where a person had metabolized an experience, we then want to support the physiology in the integration. And that's also why we space out the time, because the integration period might be 24 hours, 48 hours, 1 week. And all that is just as important as the intervention itself.
And especially when you're combining SE and SSP, it's very powerful. And so I think it's even more important to keep that in mind.
Excellent. So for practitioners who are out there listening, who maybe want to learn a little bit more, what is this the training process to become a somatic experiencing practitioner?
That's a good question. I'm out of the loop.
Well, actually, I was thinking maybe, Leah, you said that you're going through the training, so you obviously know what's happening right now. So what does that involve?
Yeah. So the training, something I really appreciate about Somatic Experiencing International, the institute that puts on the trainings themselves, is that it's open to all different types of disciplines. And when I was making my decision on training in SE, part of the reason why I chose it over, you know, there's so many different ways that you can approach this type of work, was I was looking for a new lens to see the world through. I didn't want just an accessory or something to throw on. I wanted a brand new way to see the world. And actually, you fill out an application, if the process is still the same, you fill out an application to enter into the 3-year training program. And I wrote that in my application, said I'm looking for a new way to see humans, to see living things, to see animals. I want a brand new paradigm. And so the process itself, application, as I mentioned, open to all disciplines. So physical therapists can absolutely benefit from becoming an SEP, as can energy workers, as can body workers, occupational therapists, mental health workers, and even someone that is working on the front lines. Like if you're working in an emergency response room or an ambulance or a medic in any way, all these different ways of entering into a support or caregiving position, you would benefit from SE training, because it's to be able to see the nervous system or read the nervous system and support the nervous system. And everyone has a nervous system. It's a 3-year training program. And each year you have 3 modules, your first year and your second year. And then your third year, you have 1 or 2 modules. And then there's a number of other requirements as far as hours and consultation, but that's the process that you would work through. And then you would have your certification as a somatic experiencing practitioner.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So we'll put a link to Somatic Experiencing International in the show notes and on the Safe and Sound Protocol podcast Facebook page. So if people want to learn more about that as well. And I'm assuming that part of the training is a big part of polyvagal theory, because I know that provides a understanding our nervous system. So Leah, is that right?
Yeah, there's a whole section in your beginning year training around polyvagal theory. And and then if I can just add that part of the training is actually experiencing SE. You're required to go through, I think it's 18 hours of your own SE on your own nervous system. And that has been such an incredible benefit to the way that I show up to sessions. And I am going to selfishly answer your last question because I thought it was such a beautiful one. And that what the gift or the contribution of SSP is to our fields, in my mind, is changing you as a practitioner. When I say that the SSP changed my life, I've been through it 6 times. And each time I go through it, I come out different and what feels like more whole. And when between SE and SSP, and then all the other ways that we pursue wholeness or realize our wholeness that already exists, it allows you to show up with clients different. And so I think that's a real gift for SSP and what I've experienced.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So I'm getting aware of time, but I just love towards our end of our conversation, if you guys have like a favorite book that you're or a favorite resource that you'd like to share with our listeners, maybe if they want to learn more about somatic experience, and maybe not even somatic experiencing, just something that you read that like made lots of connections for helping to understand the nervous system and this interpersonal relationship. So Kate, do you have something that you'd like to share?
Well, I'm thinking anything by Kellerman, who is a father of somatics. And that is not specifically SE or SSP driven, because, you know, he did his work a long time ago. But Stanley Kellerman talked about how we take shape and the impact of our shape and our physiology on the formation of who we are. And his work has deeply impacted me as I look at formative somatics and how I shape my, my own method and my own model. So I would say find something there. He's a prolific writer and short and really yummy. Mm-hmm.
And how do I spell, what's the correct spelling of his surname?
K-E-L-L-E-M-A-N, Kellerman.
Thank you.
Stanley Keller. Stanley,
excellent. Melinda, do you have anything you'd like to share?
Yeah, there's several that are coming to me that I wanted to share, and they're somatic but also healing based. One of them is The Gifts of the Body, profound book by Jonathan Goldman. And it really goes into kind of how it's held, but from an energetic perspective. And then, of course, I don't know if all of you have read, but What Happened to You by Bruce Perry and Oprah Winfrey. That's an excellent book. So it helps give a different perspective, but help normalize for people just how the body can show up in different parts. So kind of a broader perspective.
Thank you. I love that. And Paula?
One of my favorites is Kathy Kane and Steve Terrell's book called Nurturing Resilience, which talks about the formation of regulation from childhood, and particularly this phrase they coined called the functional freeze, which it's really important because in my experience, I have a lot of providers come to my group who are operating in those. And it isn't until we get into the SSP that they start to realize that they're operating in a freeze state. And it plays, it taxes us eventually, right? And impacts our health. And so I think that is something that everyone should know about, and that comes from their book. And it's just a great resource on many levels, Nurturing Resilience.
Thank you. And Katie?
That's exactly the same book I was going to recommend.
That's so good.
I'll just add one of the other pieces that they talk about is the faux window of tolerance, which for most of my clients, they're not even in a real window. And so that somebody mentioned, I can't remember, that we have to be so careful with clients too. This is why titration is so important, because for some people, that sense of that feeling of safety is a little scary because they don't really know what that is. So I love that book.
And Laura?
Yeah, that was my book too. I love it. But I would say anything by Dana for the polyvagal theory stuff. I love her stuff. And then one of the first books that got me into this work was The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk.
I love that one too. Yeah, so many great points. And Leah?
I'm going to give a song, not a book. Is that okay? There's a song called Can't Rush Your Healing. I think that's what I call it. Let me make sure. You Can't Rush Your Healing by Trevor Hall. And if I was dedicating the song, I would dedicate the song to all of our clients, but to ourselves as well, as people who are holding space for people. There's a really, really beautiful message in it for all of us.
I love that. Listen, I just want to thank you all so much for this very rich conversation, and I know our listeners are going to just soak it up, and all the messages that have come through have just been wonderful. And thank you so much for your time and your knowledge, and I feel very connected, even though I'm in Australia and you're all on the other side of the world. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope everyone enjoyed listening to this episode. I will place contact emails for each of my guests on the show notes, and will post a short bio and contact details on the Safe and Sound Protocol podcast Facebook page. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend or a colleague. In closing, I would like to build on the short exercise I started in the last episode and practice engaging our positive affect facial muscles. Remembering that the facial feedback hypothesis shows us that we can change our affect or emotion by how we engage our facial muscles.
So while we do today's exercise, I would like to add or build on what we did last time by adding an intention. My intention today is to listen. One needs to slow down to truly listen. Listen to my body. Listen to the people in my life. And listen to the environment around me. Listen without judgment. Take a moment to think of your intention for today. Now let's start our short exercise. Wherever you are, move your focus to your face. Slowly move your cheeks towards the outer area of your eyes. The sides of your mouth may move upwards too to help support your cheeks. These muscles we typically engage when we smile. Just allow this to happen. Hold these muscles in position while you bring to mind your chosen intention and hold it for 1 to 2 minutes. And remember to breathe. Until next time, take care, Joanne. I hope everyone enjoyed listening to this episode. I will place contact emails for each of my guests on the show notes and will post a short bio and contact details on the Safe and Sound Protocol podcast Facebook page. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend or a colleague. In closing, I would like to build on the short exercise I started in the last episode and practice engaging our positive affect facial muscles. Remembering that the facial feedback hypothesis shows us that we can change our affect or emotion by how we engage our facial muscles. So while we do today's exercise, I would like to add or build on what we did last time by adding an intention. My intention today is to listen. One needs to slow down to truly listen. Listen to my body. Listen to the people in my life. And listen to the environment around me. Listen without judgment. Take a moment to think of your intention for today. Now let's start our short exercise. Wherever you are, move your focus to your face. Slowly move your cheeks towards the outer area of your eyes. The sides of your mouth may move upwards too to help support your cheeks. These muscles we typically engage when we smile. Just allow this to happen. Hold these muscles in position while you bring to mind your chosen intention and hold it for 1 to 2 minutes. And remember to breathe. Until next time, take care, Joanne.
If you'd like to learn more about the Safe and Sound Protocol in Australia and New Zealand, please contact Integrated Listening Australia. The website is integratedlistening.com.au. And for the rest of the world, please contact Unite Integrated Listening at integratedlistening.com.